Methuselah clutched her carpet bag in excitement. She was to go to America to see her father and stepmother. Not only that, she was to go on the great unsinkable ship, the Titanic. "I'll miss you," went on her aunt. "Don't go dashing around. The trip may be boring, but hold yourself down." "I'll miss you, too. I've had a grand time, and I won't run around, either." "I hope not, but I haven't much faith. Well, climb on. In the next few weeks, you'll see your dad." "Yes, I know." Methuselah jumped impatiently. "I'll walk you to your stateroom," offered her uncle. "All right," agreed Methuselah. He reached for her bag, and they marched up the gangplank.
The author of that pump primer was Megan Jackson, but it could be you. The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively, conducted today by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. Here to suggest some ways to get started is Jacqueline Jackson.
Today we've got a hodgepodge of writing ideas that I call pump primers. What's a pump primer? Well, when I was a kid, we went up to a little lake, and this lake cottage didn't have running water. It only had a pump in the kitchen. And first thing in the morning, when you tried to pump the pump, it would be dry, and you could pump and pump, and nothing would come out. And so what we had to do was, from the night before, leave a pitcher full of water on the counter, and when morning came and you needed to pump your first water, you would pour a little water into the top of the pump. And then when you began to pump, it had a way of sealing the plunger or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how the pump primer worked, but it would bring up the water and your pump would not be dry. So what these writing ideas are a little water to get the ideas flowing, to get your own stories and your own writing going. And I think they're sort of fun. They're ones that I've picked up myself or have been told about by other people. The opening this morning by my daughter Megan is a good example of one that I call "I Was There." This is to take some happening of great significance or excitement and to pretend that you or somebody that you were writing about was there. Now, you've all heard about the Titanic, I'm sure, but I found a book at a used book sale that was full of lurid accounts, first-person accounts of people who had been on the Titanic, and it was published at about that time. And I brought it home, and our kids read that book with great avidity, and it made a tremendous impression on Megan, all these stories of people, great heroism or great cowardice or great tragedy, as this great unsinkable ship went down to the bottom in a very short time after it hit the iceberg. And so for weeks I found around the house the beginnings of stories that had to do with children starting off on that great unsinkable ship, the Titanic. Megan never got to the good part. She's been great at starting stories, but not at finishing them. And so I never found out how she would have handled the moment with Methuselah, for instance, when the ship ran into the iceberg and tilted up and everybody was racing for the lifeboats. But you could take an event like the Titanic and write up what would have happened had you been there or had someone else been there. A woman named Louise Rockwell Kent has done this with good effect in quite a few books, taking a child hero and saying he went with Vasco da Gama, he went with Christopher Columbus, and then telling about Columbus's voyage from the point of view, say, of the 14-year-old cabin boy and how the whole thing looked to him. And you can see the personalities of the sailors and of Columbus himself, and it makes it very real, and it gives you the kind of detail and the kind of feelings that so many of the social study books ignore. You get the personal interest, the eyewitness account. So I suggest that you try an "I Was There" story. Another sort that we have fun with is what we call "I Bet You Never." All of us have some unique happening in our background. We have many happenings in common, but all of us have something that we bet never happened to anybody else. One of Megan's favorite I bet you nevers is, I bet you never got hit in the eye with a pancake. And that story was when she and her cousins were doing dishes one morning after a pancake breakfast, why a pancake that was left on a plate became a ball in a game of baseball, I guess you'd call it, and her cousin was batting with the spatula, and she pitched the pancake to him, and he hit the pancake, and it sailed right into her eye. I discovered later on that another shot got it into the light fixture, and there it stayed for some 6 months. So that here is Megan's I bet you never. One of my I bet you nevers was that when I was small and was standing innocently on a dock at this same lake, a little boy whipped back his fishing pole, and the line zipped around, and the fish hook caught me right in the nose, exactly where I should have been caught if I were a fish. So I bet you never got hooked in the nose with a fish hook. Well, that gives you the idea for I bet you never, and you should write the story up in all its exciting and unique details. Another you might try is a parody of a well-known tale. Fairy tales are especially well adapted to this, and I used this idea in a chapter in my book, The Ghost Boat, where the children are telling stories at night on the porch. It was Janice's turn to tell the story. Name something, she began briskly. Thad was just as prompt. A piggle-snouted trout. Something else. A fire hydrant, said Betsy. Keep naming things, Janice ordered. A pile of shampoo, long underwear, toast and marmalade, rotten eggs, a saucepan, rattled off Marcy. Okay, that's enough. Now some words like hot or cold or soft or hard to tell what things are like, but make them more unusual. So they go along getting their cast, so to speak, for the story of characters and of adjectives and so forth. And then Janice says, stop, stop, that's enough. Okay, here goes. Once upon a time, there were three fire hydrants. One was a great big daddy fire hydrant, and one was a middle-sized mommy fire hydrant, and one was a little wee baby fire hydrant. And one morning, the middle-sized mommy fire hydrant fixed them each a nice rotten egg for breakfast, but their rotten eggs were too hot, and so they went for a walk in the woods while they cooled. Marcy grinned in the dark. This reminds me of some story I think I've heard before, Thad said. But I just can't recall where, said Betsy. Shut up, Janice said amiably, and continued, Well, while they were gone, a little piggle-snouted trout with golden curls, scales, Thad inserted, golden scales came walking, I mean flipping, into the cottage, and when she saw the rotten eggs on the table, she tasted the great big rotten egg of the great big daddy fire hydrant. And so on goes that parody of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. The idea for this story would lead you to something that I call props. I first heard about this as a game that you can play, a dramatic game, where you take three unrelated items and stick them into a suitcase or a paper bag and give your guests or your schoolmates, say three or four people, this paper bag and give them 10 minutes to study what's in the paper bag and then put on a little skit using all these props. Well, it's fun to play as a dramatic game, but you can also play it with writing. The idea is to take, say, three unrelated sort of items, odd things, and put them together into a unified story. For instance, what would you do with a large encyclopedia, a hubcap, and a waffle? Or a shoestring, a plunger, and a wedding cake? Or one ski, a pat of butter, and a bathtub. Now, the thing that makes these fun is that you don't do the usual sort of thing. If your list includes volume OG to PSY of the Encyclopedia Britannica, you wouldn't have your character use that encyclopedia to look up something that he needs to know. You would think, what can be done with an encyclopedia in an entirely different sort of way? Take, for instance, a man with half a beard. Say one half of his face is clean-shaven and the other half is a beard. And a shoestring and, oh, what else, a clock or something like that. You wouldn't use the shoestring in his shoes. You might have him walking down the street, dangling the shoestring in front of him, seriously studying it, and oddly enough, he has no shoes on. But then, as your story goes along, you make these odd things fit into a reasonable, acceptable sort of explanation that has to do with the action of the story. What would go with this, of course, is brainstorming an object. You'd have to see a pencil, or a boot, or a skateboard, as a man from Mars might see it. The other day we visited a reconstruction of a colonial village, and there were lots of tools in one of these houses, and these tools could have been something from another planet. They were very common objects, and 150 or 200 years ago, whenever this tool was in common operation, anybody would have known what it was. Seeing it immediately would have brought to mind its function. But with the disuse of this object, here is a very strange sort of thing. Whatever was it used for? And you should take a look, you know, at a Coke bottle or a license plate or something like that. What other things could it be used for besides its ordinary function? A pencil, of course, you write with it, but you could also clean an ear. It could be hollowed out to carry spy messages or dope or used as a prop for a window or something like that. You see, you try to see things in a different sort of way. A variation of the props game could be a game called ink blot, where you make three ink blots folded in the middle of a paper, and then you study those ink blots to see what they remind you of and write your story using the ideas from the ink blot. A variation of this, too, would be what you could call spin a dial, where you don't just take three unrelated items, but you gather up a list of characters, many different sorts of characters. You gather up a list of settings, places where things can take place, and then a list of events. And then you spin your dial or you shake your hat and you choose a couple of characters, you choose a setting, you choose an event, and then you use your imagination to see how you can put those all together. Now, this has been done. I think I've seen a dial-a-story sort of thing that's supposed to trip one's imagination and get it going. There was an author named Edward Stratemeyer who, back in 1908, formed a syndicate to produce books. He wrote about 50 of them under his own name, and he used at least a dozen pseudonyms. For instance, he wrote the Rover Boys books under the name of Arthur Winfield, and he wrote the Motor Boy books under the name of Clarence Young, and the Tom Swift books by Victor Appleton were his, and the Bobbsey Twins by Laura Lee Hope were really Edward Stratemeyer. And he made up the plots of about 800 other books and farmed them out to anonymous hacks to fill out the plots. And I'm quite sure he must have had a sort of a dial-a-plot, dial-a-character sort of deal for all these books. Now, these resulted in pretty crummy writing, but they don't need to result in crummy writing. It depends on the imagination and the quality of the writer. You might want to try some group stories. Rigmarole is a fun group story. Have you ever played a picture game where you draw a head and then you fold over the paper, just leaving the two lines for the neck? Then the person next to you draws the upper half of the body or the whole torso and then folds it over, and the next person draws the next part of the body and you fold it over, and then the last person draws the legs, and then you open up the paper and there you have a composite and usually most humorous drawing with four people forming the picture. Well, you can do the same thing with a story. You start off a story and you bring it to an exciting spot and then you leave it. You know, two children were walking down a path. All of a sudden, Mary Ann clutched Richard and said, Oh, what's that? What's that? I can't take another step. Then you pass it on to your neighbor, and he has to determine what is the dreadful thing, the horrible thing that they have seen, and go on from there. This could lead you to open-ended stories, where a beginning is determined by the group or by something you've read. Of course, The Lady and the Tiger is a very famous one. Jack and Jill magazine, a while back, was having a series of open-ended stories. The story would be told halfway through, and at an exciting point, it would end, and then the readers were invited to send in their endings to the story. One that I recall was a boy who got up early in the morning to go and let the cat out, and it was a wintry day, and he stepped outside and the door swang shut behind him and locked. I guess the doorbell was broken. Anyway, they figured out the whole thing so that here he was outside in his pajamas in the snow, no way to get back in the house. How would you end that story? And then I also saw a Weekly Reader once that had the beginning of a story of a more fanciful sort, where the child woke up in the morning and found that the house was upside down. Where would you go to continue that sort of story? You could start even with a first line, not with a whole situation. When I was in seventh grade, I thought up a good first line, and I mentioned it to my sister. And she said, "Let's both write the story and see where we end up." I not only had a good first line, I had a good last line, so that we had the two points of the story, the beginning and the end, and we both filled in the middle. I can remember my first line. It was, "She must have been on a path, but she couldn't see her way because of the mist." You can see it would be a romantic sort of eerie story. And it was a death story, or a death and life story, in that the last line was, "The crisis is over," the doctor said, "she will live." And it was very interesting when I finished my story and my sister finished her story to see the different directions that we took through the middle of the story, and yet, you see, what path we took, and yet the paths both came back together and ended on the last sentence. Well, here's a whole bunch of pump primers, gimmicks you might call them. But the writing can be excellent writing. It doesn't need to be gimmicky writing. If you put in honest feelings, honest thoughts, if you put in real details, if you are seeing into these situations, they're not only going to be fun, but they're going to be good writing too. I suggest that you don't try to do them all at once. Pick out one for today. Another time, try a different one, and see what comes out of these pump primers.
This has been a program in the creative writing series, The Author Is You, conducted today by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. Next week, a program of children's writing. This is Ken Ost for the Wisconsin School of the Air.